This is Down to Brass Tacks. You know, as we look at this whole issue here with the CAPE results, the A-level results, someone drew to my attention something that had happened earlier this year in Britain. There was a lot of anger in Britain earlier this in August. It says here there is anger among schools, colleges, and students after nearly 40% of A-level grades awarded on Thursday were lower than teachers' predictions. It's the same issue that we are facing here right now with the CSE. In England, 36% of entries had a lower grade than teachers predicted, and 3% were down two grades in results after exams were canceled by the pandemic. School and college leaders are calling for a review and say all fees for appeals should be waived. Does that not sound familiar? You know that they also lodged a big petition online in Wales as a consequence of this. The Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, said the results were a robust set of grades. The overall results across England, Northern Ireland, and Wales show record highs for the A grades. But let's go on here to see what they did as a consequence of that. A-level students in England will be given grades estimated by their teachers rather than by an algorithm after a government U-turn. Okay? So they decided that they would address this matter in a different way. So it looks as though we are facing exactly the same kind of challenge that obtained in the UK in August of this year when it comes to the results that they got. This is Down to Brass Tacks, and a reminder that the Caribbean Examinations Council is to have a news conference at 2 o'clock today. Hello, welcome.
Hi, Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Yes, this is one of your in-and-out callers, infrequent callers. That's the number, 89 Batsman.
Oh, yes, you're the fellow who opened the batting one day, and I told you that you're... Your performance was such that you should have really come far down in the batting order.
Yeah.
Well, you're coming in the right order today, then.
You went to push me off, and then you went on and make your try to hit me below.
But I tell you, no. You could respond to me. No, you had how many days to think it through?
A few weeks, a couple of weeks.
Precisely.
Maybe. I try not to be too regular. So I come to hopefully match you a little bit if I can. Alvin was speaking to you earlier, and I was on when he said that haven't heard it, that it is supposed to be something big coming for you down the juice, you went pretty much on defensive on that. You don't know anything about it and what's not, but I don't know, I haven't heard. So, but what I'm saying is that, if there's something big coming to you, from this government, I would open my arms.
You heard what I just said. Yeah. You heard what, if you listen to what I said to Alvin, I said I too was hearing this rumor for the first time. So there ain't nothing, as far as I'm concerned, there ain't nothing coming to me.
All right, well, let me finish though. So
That puts paid to the whole thing. Nothing I know of, nothing, and as far as I'm concerned, I'm not here to respond to rumor.
I really want to revisit this Corona issue, but I just was just deviating slightly on this one. I am not saying that it is true or anything like that. I'm just saying that you've performed fairly well, pretty consistent over the last few years.
Excuse me, where are you going with this? I already tell you there ain't nothing, there ain't a smoke, there ain't a fire. Forget it, and let's move on.
I'm gonna check my dumbest already. So thanks, man. Thanks, sir. Entertaining me. So I want to compliment the guy you call Anthony America, I think. Yeah, that's what I call him. one of your best contributors to this calling program, and I want to compliment him on the approach he took to the subject. I think I heard him twice in the past, maybe a week or so, and he spoke about the mass and the whole approach the health authorities have to this corona issue that we're supposed to have here in Barbados. And I admire what he had to say. I admire him for saying what he had to say. I think he was on point. He was on point, very lucid. And I want to comment on that. He said everything I was trying to say for a little while, maybe 10 times better. And so I want to let him know that he has some backing out here. And I also think that he should probably come back a third time and try to put the icing on the cake in terms of his message he's trying to get through, make sure that everybody hears. Because apparently, to me, the health authorities here, the guys that are looking after this corona factor, they have been very heavy-handed, and we have been seeing a number of bars in particular who have gone belly up. Some restaurants that are afraid to open back up because they don't know when the corona the health fellows are going to come around and tell them to back the people too close and everything. So people can't operate in the manner in which they were operating. It's affecting their business. We lost a lot of business during the shutdown period when this corona started hit. A lot of businesses went down, the hotels industry. And we continue to shut down, to cause the shutdown of businesses at a time when there's no corona in the island, as Auntie America would have said. And we have got to me, look at this thing overall more closely. Look and see, examine why there's no corona in Barbados. Okay, the evidence is there, and you know, so you want me to tell me that's not so. And I'm not saying that there's not a threat from overseas, that there's an overseas threat coming towards us. But as my boy said, if you manage it properly at the ports, we are okay. And you know, the things that these people could do and look at in order to try to mitigate against the local population being exposed. So I am complimenting him again on tackling the subject, and I hope he comes back. And I hope the authorities, the health in particular guys, stop causing the scaring of the local bars and restaurants in particular, and allow them to operate in a normal fashion. Okay? You have anything to say on that, or you? Mr. Ellis?
I am more cautious. I watched the coronavirus and what has happened in many countries around the world. As we speak, the United Kingdom and France are reporting their highest rise in daily coronavirus case numbers.
What?
And I think that given the fact that this thing can slip in, and the most frightening part of it is that people can have this virus and you don't even know. They themselves don't even know.
And but is there evidence?
You had a lot to say already.
You mentioned something. I want to ask you a question maybe because you can still continue, but I want to know.
So I am of the view, I prefer to err on the side of caution. Indeed, I don't think that people are to be encouraged to go there in this current environment to just go with gay abandon into doing what they were doing before. I think it's potentially dangerous, and I can understand why the authorities will err on the side of caution. It is all well and good for people like you to talk, but the day that this something goes wrong here and it slips away, if not you, there will be some other people who will be saying how irresponsible the authorities were, and they should have done this and they should have done that. And by that time, the damage will be much greater than what you are seeing today. So that's where I stand on that.
Okay. So we're going to use that if factor to consider how many populations.
It's an if factor based on the fact that we did have a situation not so long ago where we didn't shut down early enough and we had four and five cases a day.
Yeah, but
we have already been there. In
but
my
Mr.
judgment.
Ellis, No, I don't think so. The cases were external, and we were very casual at the time. We didn't. Maybe I
so we're being less than casual right now, then.
Because we didn't know much about it, and a lot of people didn't know a lot about it. So therefore, you were thought we were caught with our pants down.
You know, when in all of this,
when I call for masks, Mr. Ellis, I'm trying to not get on the top of me at this point in time. When I call for masks, I was one of the early people, one of the few that called. When you was back in the authorities, which is all right, to saying, well, look, only those that might have it or believe they have it should wear masks. I came out and I said, everybody should wear masks. That is what I am on. Anybody who knows my voice will know that I said that in the early. Everybody should wear the mask. Now, I when it started happening, after it started kicking, it did kick in immediately. Then we saw the reduction in the numbers. By that time, we were going up. I can't remember how high we were, but we started a soft fall back. I think we were going towards 50, 60. Now. Then we started to see a fall back. Sometimes we started raining masks. People were catching it from people from overseas and didn't realize it. They didn't really understand what was happening. We didn't know. But we know a lot. We know a lot more now than we did then. And there hasn't been any spread. I've seen people congregating, going left, right, and center, congregating, no mask, over a period of time, from the time the curfew was removed.
Well, I think, but your point is already made.
And I'm saying that no corona has
well, I think, but you've already said that.
Right. So I want to say to you that I believe I have a little bit of credibility and speak and saying. When I speak, I spoke about
community. Maybe so, but I don't know. Your problem is who's listening to you.
Even before the health minister spoke about it, I also spoke about it. And I said there's a little bit of credibility I have.
You're belaboring this point.
Yeah, I am. Because
I got to stop you.
Yeah, because...
Because once you have reached the point where I genuinely believe that most people would understand what you're saying, why am I going to allow you to belabor the point? It doesn't make sense. I've given you the opportunity, so let's move on. All right. Coming back to this issue of the A-level results in Britain, what the British did is that they said that the A-level and GCSE results in England would now be based on teacher-assessed grades. That's how they fixed that problem. It was described as a spectacular U-turn. And in it, the education secretary announced the government would scrap the controversial standardization model drawn up by the exams regulator to award grades in lieu of exams. Instead, both A-levels and GCSE results would revert to center-assessed grades, which were submitted by schools earlier in the summer. Now, what will CXC do in these circumstances? This is down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good afternoon.
You know, in all of this, I was a little... I found the response of the education minister in Barbados to be an interesting one. Because her response to me, it came across as though it was essentially taking the side of the students. But in her position as a government minister, I would have thought that she would have been privy to what was going on at CXC level. And if she was not, then she would put herself in a position to find out from them more directly what was going on. Because I think the governments of the region have a particular pivotal position that they play within CXC. So it came across as though she was too much of an outsider in a matter that, as Minister of Education, she has enough clout and authority to be able to find out from CXC what was going on. At the end of the day, it sounded as though the Minister of Education of Barbados is asking CXC for a review, and CXC publicly rebukes the Minister of Education, when I thought it wasn't necessary for us to go in that direction at all. But that's only my view. I mean, what do you think? Down to brass tacks.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Hi.
Yeah, first, I got about 3 little points here, but my first one is, last Friday, I made a difference with you,
mm-hmm.
and the way you see the elections in St. George coming, when you were saying that the Democratic Labour Party got a good chance now of winning the seat because the government got all the seats and you're voting.
I didn't say that. I didn't say that I have a good chance of winning the seat.
Oh, no, you were saying that if they don't win now, and I remember you very clearly.
No, can I clarify? Can I clarify what I was saying or what I thought I was saying? I was talking about, I looked at what the BLP could go into the election saying, and I looked at what the Dems could go into the election saying, which is that one argument is the size of the majority that the government has, and therefore I anticipate that there could be an argument that says the BLP really does not need this seat. The people of Barbados need to give this seat to the Democratic Labour Party or one of the other opposition parties. Given the fact that one person has held this seat for the BLP for 26 years, I don't think that one can discount that. And therefore, I see it as having now become pretty well entrenched as a BLP seat. So I can't say, well, you know, I expect that the BLP will be beaten. I think the favorites to win the seat will be the Bees.
Will be the Bees?
Yes.
Oh, but I even like the BLP to win it. But how you come across to me last Friday is that because the Bees got 29 the whole parliament and that kind of stuff.
There's an argument that one could expect.
I don't think so. I think
whether you accept the argument or not is up to you and the electorate. But it is an argument that I would expect would emerge.
No, David, it's not a solid argument, David.
Well, that's your judgment.
I mean, your people do not see how the average John Browners think. Have you interviewed 40 people? I would imagine about 37 would tell you that what I vote for John Brown, what he can do for me on the Dems or anybody else. And most people that vote, just vote and think of terms as somebody.
You mean in a by-election?
By-election or general elections, because you are adding, if you vote for
So people didn't vote. People across the board didn't vote for Mayor Motley in all these constituencies last time.
It's off balance now, David. It was never an off balance in the history of Barbados.
That counters your argument that they vote only for the constituency representative.
It is completely off balance, David. If you give the Dems one seat, which I would like them to get, right? But if you give the Dems one seat, the people that's going to vote in us, so suppose they want something. She and I have to me, and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That is how you see it. So I know most people.
Let me say to you, I'm not going to fault you in that reasoning. But I'm saying to you, you know, at the end of the day, this is all about psychology. You know, this is about.
And that is your prime minister, full of psychology.
Yeah, but the prime minister is a person who will make decisions. Some that are successful and some that are not. You know, when a person becomes prime minister of a country in these parts, all of a sudden that person takes on a degree of power, authority, and more than anything else. That person can't make the mistakes in the eyes of some, but they are only human beings. That's why politicians win and lose. That's why Owen Arthur was prime minister and then he became former prime minister. You know, Errol Barrow was prime minister and became former prime minister. No matter, Tom Adams died in office, but at one stage was starting to get start to get some licks. That's the nature of politics. I don't believe in this thing that anybody becomes supernatural because they become prime minister.
I don't think so neither, so I don't see where you're going with that. But what I'm saying to you is, now, I remember you in a previous discussion too, when the prime minister said at one stage she going to be calling George, she won't be calling me George, she'll be calling me something else, and you all talk about sir, sir, sir. I didn't say it's necessary, you know. You remember that?
Tell me what you saw it as.
I think she got the Chief Justice job for him.
Who, for George?
He's a lawyer.
George Payne? He's a lawyer. All right, well, okay.
All right, then. But and running up. I
well, you know, you just tell me that the thing is about us is that people like me don't see it the way that people like you see
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but I and winding up though, I want to say, I see the Prime Minister as a person with 29 children and treating the government like she kitchen. And whenever the call off, right, she give them a lollipop and tap them on the shoulder and they come out smiling and feeling good after she do what she got to do. You know what I mean? And that's what I see the country guy now.
So you consider a caring parent?
I don't know. I consider a very cruel parent that think that she owns the kitchen. The kitchen belongs to her. And she don't remember that the kitchen really belongs to her. That's how you see it. Because you come up crying, she tap you by your shoulder and get a lollipop and you're gone. Because, you know, everybody for a while had Tony Moore suspect. I know...
I heard that thing on the ground for so long.
You say you hear it on the ground?
Yeah, it was the worst kept secret in Barbados.
Yeah. Right, but Tony Moore showed it in a big way. In a big way, but I know she's not the first union leader that went into politics because I was living in Frankwell constituency when I was a young man, and also Leroy Trotman. So, but
I don't think
Tony Moore could be a good example. I mean, think could be a good example for Frank Walker and those, because, I mean, she got some speeches there that left a lot to be desired at Labor Days and that kind of stuff.
Well, and I want you to take into consideration some comments that have been made here by Sir Roy Trotman. He has supported her. Indeed, he says that he is the one who, he's one of the people who encouraged her to take on this particular role. He says, I was then, as I am now, that if you are going to be in a senior position in the trade union, and that is the Barbados Workers Union, that what was very desirable, in fact, what was in my view a prerequisite, was for you to take on as well the additional responsibility of being a political leader. I'm not saying she had to be a prime minister. I'm saying you had to offer yourself at the level of the lower house of assembly to have another string to your bow and to be in a position where you can offer even better representation. That's what he said. So Roy is adamant that once Senator Moore gets to sit in Parliament, she can then speak at a deeper, wider level on issues of health, development, and socioeconomics, which impact men and women nationally. So that's another perspective on this idea of the trade union leader today. One of the questions that has been raised, though, is whether she should resign as an independent senator rather than wait for the Governor General to revoke her appointment. Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
Two things, maybe a minute and a half for each. First one, I got to respond and kind to the gentleman who spoke about that guy they call the anti-America with COVID. And I have to say that you tried to respond to him, but you said nothing that countered what he had said. I would say this. COVID does not exist in Barbados outside of quarantine.
Yes, sir, so already. You're going to go over that again?
Hear me out, because you've got to count it in a way that makes no...
But you've already said that repeatedly. Yeah.
But you repeat yourself over and over again as well. So
no, I don't. Not on this particular point.
Well, no, but you have counted him, and you didn't count to him.
No, I ain't counting nobody. I have given him an alternative view, and that's my view.
But the view
I am not here. It is not. It does not matter whether I convince you or not.
No, it does matter, because your opinion is probably held on to a little far.
Probably not, because the way that you speak, yours might be more overpowering than mine.
You see, now, when you get this way, it seems as if you want me not to say it, to continue saying what it is I want to say, particularly with COVID. There is not a doctor in Barbados that will come and say otherwise. There's not a consultant, not a minister in government that will say otherwise. Barbados is COVID-free. And the only way that we will get COVID, it doesn't exist in Barbados naturally. The only way it will happen is if it comes through the port. We cannot be compared with Canada. We cannot be compared with England or Germany or even Trinidad and Tobago, who have border issues. Unlike them, we have water all the way around. The only way you can come into Barbados is through the ports. It is possible to swim from St. Vincent to come to Barbados. A man did that last year, but he had to do it with all kinds of boats and stuff around him. It is possible that people are coming in for some bits of fishing boats.
The man who called said that he called largely because he had heard you articulate this position and he agreed with you.
But you are countering and saying that we cannot open up again because of England. And I'm saying that the two are not comparable. They are not. We do not have the same problems as Canada and England. They have border issues.
We do not have border issues.
No. There is no reason for us to be wearing masks.
I am here to quarrel with you.
I am not here to quarrel with you.
Okay.
St. James South. We are very fortunate. I hear people talking about politicians from St. George and stuff. Why St. George? Well, St. James South. Well, we had Liz Thompson. But you can't control it. Man, they had to fire Liz from the cabinet, man. She was so big. And she never said an untrue word. But then the Prime Minister had to say, come back, Liz. We need you, boy. I see Liz pick up garbage bags for a whole day to prove a point. That's the kind of politicians that we have out here. I know that Sandra a little quiet, but she can come into her own. And we had this guy just recently, and this is about three years ago, he had this to say.
Prime Minister, sure, the order can be very decent with the trade unions, not me. Because I know that we have some trade union leaders today who are far more interested in themselves than they are in the workers of this country. I don't care what they say about me. Tony Moore and Akani McDowell have committed themselves to the Barbados Party. They have stopped us and abused us at every step of the way. And listen, I've always said our political platforms and get people personal life and that kind of thing. But when you bring your realists to my feelings, it's time for me to fight back.
No. Quoting stuff that has been circulating on social media. And the person who was talking there was who?
Let her refuse.
He want to take control of your radio station. you can't do that to us. I mean, you got to put us in. First of all, if you can put something on the air like that, we should know what you're putting on the air. The producer should know. You can't come and just drop it on the air like that. Well, you could put anything there and run us in trouble. But I've heard it. I've heard it on social media. And it is something that Tony Moore will have to respond to at some point. Because, it was a position that was espoused. And therefore, in light of what she has now done, you're going to find that there are people who will reflect on positions that she's taken over the years. This is down to brass tacks. Hello?
David, we have a report of, there were reports of a fire at the landfill, and we have a report from Carl Alf Padmore that was recorded by our newsroom in response to that. I have that for you now.
Persons have been calling our office concerned about some black smoke they're seeing coming from the area of our mangrove pond landfill. What is actually happening? We are doing a trial test in terms of disposing of some mattresses. It's under the guidance of the Barbados Fire Service. They are there as well. We have built a pit where over time we will be burning these mattresses. And because we have over 7,000 of such items up there in the landfill. They don't contain any type of toxic material, and this will continue for the next hour and a half or so under the watchful eye of the fire service. These mattresses would have contained things like bed bugs and stuff like that, so we have received permission from the Barbados Fire Service to do this control burning up there. So by midday, it should be finished.
Okay, so you have another dimension to the bed bug problem. That ships that have been off Barbados for quite some time also are carrying bed bugs. And given the fact that there has to be some kind of contact with people going and coming because they have to be serviced in various ways, that's another possible source. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Good afternoon.
Yes, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi, how are you?
I'm well, and you?
I am quite well. I am the lady who would have called earlier this week. I'm on a different note today.
Mm-hmm.
And on the same note as well that I was when the call was dropped. And this is regarding the $300 million that they want to throw into the
tourism
hotel industry.
Yeah.
My call was dropped, so I was not able to speak with Dr. Christina Hines or the other economists from Canada. Would you be able to enlighten me at this point in time, seeing that the COVID-19 is flaring up practically all over the world, all over the world, plus from our major
source market,
companies, our source market and stuff like that. Can you enlighten me as to at this point in time, what may be your suggestions, or if anyone can call in and say what their suggestions are? I am pretty much interested in what's going on, because that's part of my business as well, which has affected me tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
Not only me, my whole household. And when I said affected us in more ways than one, mentally, physically, and everything else.
Expand on that.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mentally,
important for. Well, why is it that it has had this kind of impact, and over what period? What actually happened?
Well, it would have started from when we had our first close down from March 28th.
This is a hotel or a tourism-related
business? This is a tourism-related business. It's a small homestay.
Yes, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And that is what I have been doing for over a number of years to keep my livelihood going.
Yes.
My husband is also in the tourism industry. And he actually spoke to me this morning, and he said that all the bookings that they would have had from the UK have all been canceled because due to COVID.
Let me ask you, when were they? Do you have a sense of when they were all canceled? Because you could have had a situation where you still had some up to a recent point, or. And then because of the recent upsurge, that
right.
could have eliminated the rest, or they could have been wiped out from very early, all back in March, April. Do you have
no.
a sense?
Yes, I do. They were all canceled as of yesterday.
As of yesterday?
Yes, as of yesterday.
So up until then, approximately how many did you have pending?
For me, it's a small homestay. I had about six persons pending for my homestay.
Yes.
And then I'm speaking now of a larger hotel where my husband's work.
Right.
And he's depressed. I'm depressed. I'll be honest with you. Because then that would be now no income coming in for any of us. Plus, I don't know. I'm subject to correction. That God knows how many hotels out there as well are having that challenge.
So you are basically saying to us
mm-hmm.
that the upsurge in cases in the United Kingdom has had a significant impact on your own operation.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And therefore, by extension, the people
mm-hmm.
who run tourism in Barbados mm-hmm. perhaps should tell the rest of us whether this is something that has happened to a large extent in the industry. But you can only speak from your own experience.
Now, where does that leave you? Where does that leave me?
Yeah.
Besides broke,
mm-hmm.
it leaves me broke, it leaves me depressed, and it leaves me as to what do I go forward to now. I don't know what the next day will bring. So, in other words, it's a very serious situation, and I can speak for me, but I am sure there are many situations out there for those as well, other than myself. Now, if we take the $300 million and we throw it all into the tourism industry to do retraining and to refurbish hotels, but then we don't have anyone here that is coming for whatever reason, how do we challenge that? We're going to put more people on the breadline.
The question is, what is the alternative that you can think of?
Uh-huh.
If not that, what?
Well, if that, this has been what I've been doing for the longest while.
Right. So right. Here you are now in a situation where the government says to you, all right, in the interim, it is quite possible that even though you've had these cancellations, the situation can subside in Britain in the not-too-distant future, and people who had cancelled may come back, or others will book with you. But in the meantime, we are offering you what the government has put on the table. Would you say no to that?
What is that, the $300 million?
Yes, because you could be a beneficiary
yes,
of
I
it.
Yes, I would say no to it, because I don't think, me personally, I am not an economist, I am not a doctor of, you know, political science or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
I have my son who is doing economy at UB. It's his first year, but during that first year, I was able still to guide him accordingly, because he did not want to do it at all. And when you sit back and you listen to what is happening in the world in its entirety, we can see that our tourism is crumbling.
The
well, to me, I'm only giving you my point.
Understood. I've come back to your experience, and I ask you this. If the government says we are going to put some money into your business to tide you over because of all the difficulties that you have identified, you say to me, you don't really want that money. What are you going to do? What is your alternative?
Well, that's a very good question. And that is a question that I would ask the government then, what are they going to do? The UK is going to be shutting down travel if they have not by today. No one is going to be allowed to travel in or out. We have the US, which our big source is not from the US.
Mm-hmm.
UK, Europe, we have UK, Switzerland, all those who are really our providers. And they are actually, you know, everybody is going on a closed down now again.
Your position is, I don't want any of the money. What's your husband saying?
Well, he is concerned. He is, I can tell he's depressed.
Yes.
And I can tell that he is saying that, then what next are we going to do? Now, I'm also saying that too as well, is in that, we don't know how many more people are out there who are, like, even suffering to get their children back into school. That's just one example that I can think of right now off the top of my head, plus more. Well, school has just started. We had ample enough time to get schools in order. And now the lodge and the other school, they're closed because of environmental problems.
But I still come back to, I can't understand why, in the circumstances, you would turn your back on whatever assistance the government is making available. I mean, you're supposed to be private sector. In all these circumstances, you can't come up with an alternative plan that is workable.
Well, this has been my bread and butter for the last...
Agreed.
This is 2020. This has been my bread and butter for the last almost 20 years.
Agreed. But it seems to me that in these circumstances, your family does not know where to turn in this crisis.
Agreed.
And to me, it would seem important that if the government has created this framework, to work with you. Then engage with the government agencies to find out what assistance they can give and what commitment they are asking of you in the circumstances. Because what is your alternative? It seems to me that the alternative means total collapse of your business.
Well, I can be honest with you, David. It's a total collapse of my business right now.
Somebody suggests that you may consider shifting to another sector. But, I mean, you see, I come right back to what you're good at versus the time it takes to make the shift to something else. And it takes a lot of time for you to develop that efficiency and that competitiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem with the tourism sector. What is this other sector that you can shift to? All right. You can rent. You got property. So you can rent the property to locals instead. You can turn it into a motel.
I'm not going to turn it into a motel.
Right.
I'm not going to turn it into a motel.
What are your options? If I said to you, go and look for something else to shift it into, what could you possibly think of?
But there's nothing that I can think of right now at this point in time. I have been thinking from the time we closed down in March, and it's been driving me crazy.
I think this is something that really will require government, if you call it technical advice, support, and all within the ambit of this $300 million support. There are many people like you. If there is an alternative, then the government ought to be in a position to advise as to where you can go. The government says we're going to put money not just in tourism, but we're going to put money into some small businesses as well. You're going to have to give us preference shares so that in exchange for the support that we are giving you. Therefore, you and your husband need to reach out to them. And perhaps what they need to do is to make available to us so that we can pass on to you a number or a set of numbers that you can call so that you can talk to somebody who can then give you some advice. You can go on Zoom or whatever and have a conversation about the options that are available. Because as it stands right now, the government knows more than the rest of us about the options that it is making available. And you are just an example of so many other people out there who are scratching their heads. But, you know, we started to see a little bit of light at the end of this tunnel from what you are saying. And then comes the second wave in Britain. Right? Second or third? It might be the third wave. But this new wave that has now knocked the wind out of your sails. And that has serious implications for Barbados into the winter season.
So what I am saying is, okay, the second wave has hit us now. We're going into the winter season. Now when we throw $300 million into the tourism industry, then there's no one to come to Barbados. First, I can say you refurbish the hotels, you refurbish the homestays, you refurbish the guest houses and stuff like that. After that is done, then where do you go from there?
I think what you're dealing with here is what is hoped will be a short-term measure, so that by the time the COVID situation settles down, you would have a tourism sector that is fit for purpose, that is more ready to receive the people who are willing to come to Barbados. I think I'm also hearing that there's a sense in the industry that there's this pent-up demand waiting for the winter season if and when the COVID situation subsides.
If and when. And it's not on the rise again.
Well, I spoke to one of my sisters the other day in New York, and they tell me that in the Jewish community in New York, there is a concern about the rise of COVID there. There are places where you get this lull, and then for whatever reason, you can have this upsurge. That is why here in Barbados, the authorities are so cautious about going in the direction of reopening too much. So it's very easy to slip. But my advice to you, based upon what I am hearing, is that you need to get in touch with the government, agencies of government, dealing with the tourism sector. Tell them your situation and suggest to them that you need to get some guidance as to how best you can deal with this in light of the fact that the government has said that it is there to assist people exactly in your situation. Okay? I am very sorry to hear this, but, it touches you directly, but indirectly, it will touch many, many more people. All right? Thanks for calling.